Hey everybody, it's Karen, and I just want to take a moment to give a shout out to our sponsors. Our sponsors being you, the listeners. We are really grateful to you who support our podcast and keep it on air. If you're not yet one of our sponsors, you can become one at the link bit.ly/ourpod, O-U-R-P-O-D. And that will take you to a sign-up form where you can sign up. It is $3.99 a month. And when you become a member, you get all kinds of perks and chances to talk to us. And every single month, a free webinar recording that's worth $50. So it's actually a pretty good deal. So hope you'll consider it. And thanks a lot.
Welcome to today's podcast. I'm Kel Weinold.
And I am Dr. Karen Kelski, and we're, as always, happy that you're here with us today.
Today's podcast is a continuation of a conversation. So the last podcast we recorded, not the last two that you've heard, which were pulled from earlier because they were so relevant to this time in the academic child life, we're carrying on from our conversation about where do I start. And one of the things that I mentioned in where do I start was the creation process, right? Ideation, conceptualization, creation or production, and then celebration.
Mm.
And we're not going to talk about celebration today, but we're going to talk about what happens when you don't do that, which is burnout. The topic of the day is burnout. So we're starting right there, but as with all things Karen and Kel, it's taken a winding road.
Yeah. Yeah, and we already discovered that we are coming at it from two different directions, not in disagreement, but in an interesting different set of inspirations, I guess, coming at this same topic. Because I just had a book delivered and that I was thinking about, and Kel ran into, you ran into an article that you're thinking about, and lo and behold, they both intersected in the topic of burnout.
Though, so we're going to do sort of the setup, like why do people get burned out? We couldn't cover all of that in a single podcast, but we're going to start there, and then we're going to talk about one of the things that the particular article that I read was talking about the reasons that people burn out, right? Like what has changed in the workplace that that causes people to burn out. And the book that these people are writing from is a book called The Passion Paradox. Then that brings in the whole question of passion, which will set us off on another thing, I'm sure. But the first thing that we want to talk about is that burnout is basically that lack of desire to do what you think you want to do, right?
right?
It's like you have the desire to have it done,
right?
But you're just too fried to do it,
right?
You're just over it.
And I think that pretty much characterizes almost everybody right now, after a year of COVID, yeah. And certainly academics and certainly academic women. But, it's never been more widespread than it is right now.
That's probably true. Although I do always want to keep in mind our listeners out there who are actually weathering the pandemic okay because they have the tools. Well, I don't even know if it's tools, that their personalities allow them to hunker down and focus. And I think that's a small group, but I always do want to say, I know you're out there. I know you're like, but I've produced 5 articles. I don't know what you're talking about. I'm going to guess you're burning out in other areas. So let's just a little aside there. But yeah, I think people are fried. They're reaching their limit.
Mm-hmm. I think they reached it and they've gone past it.
Yeah. And so here, let me tell you about the journey for me today.
Mm-hmm.
So an article pops up on Google that says, why do people not finish simple tasks? And I thought, I should read this because this is relevant to coaching, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this thing goes immediately to these folks who wrote The Passion Paradox, and they're talking about, people put things off, blah, 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 blah. But one of the key reasons they put things off is they're burned out. They just don't want to do it. Mm-hmm. So it's not the thing of like procrastination in the sense of not being able to do the mood or the emotion management to risk the new thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the like, because that's a different kind of procrastination,
sure. Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Then just like, this is a pretty simple task.
Mm-hmm.
Like, here's an email. Pretty simple. No emotional attachment to it, whatever. Mm-hmm. But just like, I can't. Ugh. So that's what we're talking about. We're not talking about procrastination as in I'm putting off a thing I dread, but I just don't want to do it.
Yeah.
So that's that. So I went on that journey.
Right. You went on that journey.
Found that, ended up on this book, ended up hearing the dreaded P word, got totally reactive about that.
Passion.
Like, right.
Right. Passion. Which is like the 4-letter word of the professor is in.
Right. And then these people were going to start telling me about how it's passion. That's why you're burned out, because you don't have the right passion for your work. So got a little bit immediately irritated. But then as I went on to read this article that I sent to you and said, hey, I think this is an interesting article. They talked about there being two kinds of passion. Mm-hmm. Basically, there's, I'm not going to do it justice, but there's basically like good passion and bad passion.
Yeah.
There's obsessive passion and there's balanced passion, right?
Right.
Right. There's, so there's this thing that where you're doing thing something because you care about it, and this thing where you're doing something looking for external approval for it. And the external approval thing makes you burn out.
So they call it harmonious passion, harmonious, which leads to sustainable performance, and obsessive passion, which leads to burnout. Do you want me to?
No, I actually
want to give the names of the guys, though, because I don't like, I always like to cite.
Right. Good plan.
Cite the names.
But let me just.
So
quick,
it's Brad Stolberg, Stulberg. Oh, he keeps saying we, but it's like one guy. So it's Brad Stolberg.
But I think that the passion paradox, that whole thing is a we. But anyway, okay, great. Good citation. Now, this idea of harmonious versus obsessive, I thought was really interesting. So that's when I went on to, the Academy. Oh, I should tell Karen about this. Mm-hmm. Oh, we should talk about this more. Because what they talked about burnout was this whole idea that when you switch the thing that you enjoyed to seeking someone else's approval of it, that's where burnout happens, right? So you could work happily along. You probably remember this in grad school, right? When you first started reading everything and you could get lost for hours in all those texts. And it was just like, oh, there we go. Mm-hmm. And then the lens starts to shift. That's the wrong word, but sort of your focus starts to shift after a while. And pretty soon it's like, what will my advisor think? What will these people think? Can I get this published? And so your drive becomes external.
Yes.
And that's, I thought that was just fascinating.
Well, it is. And there, just to fully flesh this out, the other thing that they say in the process of making this argument, that Brad Stolberg says in the process of making this argument, is that the thing that leads to passion is, there is a three qualities: autonomy, mastery, and belonging. People who feel passionate about their work, according to him, have some control over the work. That's autonomy. They have mastery. That means they are able to see and track progress, and belonging, in the feeling that you're rooted in community. And basically, the argument they're saying is that there are certain fields like medicine, education, sports, and corporate work where people appear to have that, or should have that,
or did have it.
Yeah, you know, whatever. We could talk about that. But then they lose this. They lose autonomy. They lose mastery. They lose belonging. And when those are missing, they replace them with this unmet psychological need with something external, i.e. an overwhelming focus on validation, metrics, or as they say in the articles, kind of the social media hits.
Right.
Like
right.
Something that's telling you you're okay, because you're not internally this unmet psychological need that we have, especially people in those types of fields, for mastery, autonomy, and belonging.
Which I just want to put it as an aside. If you go back and read some of the work that I've done on the blog on productivity, I actually talk about that sense of belonging as a critical part of motivation in motivating elite athletes to work. And I think of academics as elite athletes, of working at a very high level, trying to improve all the time. But without that sense of belonging, I'm part of a thing, how that your motivation disappears. That was about motivation, but check it out. So we're going to, if we could just leave behind for a second the P word, right? If we could just not talk about passion for a minute, because I would love to get into this in some future world.
Well, it is a dangerous thing, because I don't want our listeners, I mean, if you are our listeners, you already know this, but I don't want it to sound like I want you to go around throwing the passion word all over the place, especially in your cover letters and your teaching statements, because I have whole blog posts and like my entire book is like, stop saying that word. So in other words, we kind of want you to have passion. No, we totally want you to have passion. we just don't want you to talk about it. Using
well,
that word.
I guess that I would like to, if we could, how do you make passion a non-emotional word? But if we could look at passion dispassionately, right? If yeah. we could look at it like they're talking about,
right?
As that sense of wanting to do your work, that desire yeah. to do the thing that you enjoy.
Yeah.
All right. So we'll just yeah. leave behind that word and we'll say, look, at some point you said, I really love studying primates and I love the way they move and I want to understand gait and whatever the word is for moving, movements, mm-hmm. how primates move through mm-hmm. space. I look at that. That is so cool. Mm. So that's a like an intellectual quote unquote passion, right? Mm-hmm. It's this focus. It's this thing I really care about. Mm-hmm. So if we could stay right there rather than my heart is filled with joy,
right?
But more, I am actually intrigued, compelled, fascinated by, and I want to work on this.
Yes. Okay. Well, remember that the topic is burnout.
Right.
So, I mean, passion is secondary to this issue of, well, it's the lack of it or the loss of it. The loss of connection to that right. is where burnout comes
right.
in.
And that was where I was headed next, is if we can just bracket that as this thing, mm-hmm. and then suddenly X number of years, and it's not suddenly, slowly mm-hmm. over X number of years, you have come to not have that same feeling of joy or intrigue or enthusiasm. You have there's a new article that comes out. There's a new book that needs to be read. There's even an opportunity for a grant. Well, sure. And you're just like, meh.
Well, it's the workload. Well, I'm not sure where you're going. All right. And then see, this is a good pivot point for me to say that where my mind goes is in the kind of critique of labor practices
yeah,
that
yeah.
is your larger environment of you're adjuncting, you're right. exhausted, your kids are home from school because the pandemic was mismanaged. This is a labor question.
Right.
That's right. About conditions that you're working in. And so the burnout is about that. And I think that's a really interesting question related to those three things that Stolberg talks about with that mastery, autonomy, and community, because, and his field he was looking at were medicine and this and that, but he didn't include the professoriate in there because I'm sure that he thinks the professoriate still maintains autonomy. Mm-hmm.
Mastery
and community and belonging. What he and most people outside of the academy don't realize is that maybe it did at one point, but less and less so for fewer and fewer people. So that's why it becomes such a slog.
Right. And so I feel like the things you're talking about are sort of what we're like the actual labor, right? The actual thing. Like I have to do X, I've been adjuncting, I've been doing this, I've been doing all that. And so what I'm interested in, I mean, and what we talked about or what we are interested in, because we already said this, is to back up to that, those three things, is what is it that, where has the loss of autonomy occurred for the academy that means that not only do you have too much to do, which is a given, let's say you have too much to do, and there's a difference between burnout and exhaustion, burnout and overwork. And so where do you see that the idea of autonomy has crumbled within the academy? From the day that you started as a professor, looking at professors now, where did autonomy, what's changed in terms of autonomy?
I think what has sucked a sense of autonomy is the defunding at the largest level, the defunding, the lack of resources, the sense that it's the futility of it, the sense that although you in grad school is still, if you're fully funded and you're living in a place that's a reasonable cost of living, you can still make it work. Not everybody can, but some can, depending on where they live. And so there is still, in the early years of grad school, I think there is still quite commonly that sense of joy and exploration. Oh my gosh, look, I'm in a PhD program in philosophy and I'm exploring these ideas. There is that sense, but I think it's shorter and shorter lived. And I think people quickly begin to realize that the funding doesn't cover your actual cost of living, or you get closer to going on the job market and you realize the how scary it is, or you actually finish and then you're looking for a job, you can't get one, so you're adjuncting and wearing yourself out. And in the STEM fields, it's the incredible competition for grants with like 7% success rates at NSF or whatever. And so I think really, in a way, I mean, I am, you know, very materialistically oriented. It is the material conditions of the work and that sense of a loss of a future. Mm-hmm. That, to me, that's autonomy sucking, because it means I'm doing everything right. I'm doing everything you told me to do, and it's meaningless. I can't control the outcome.
Right. So here's the thing that I think is interesting, that maybe in the change from when we each joined the tenure track or when we joined the tenure track versus now, versus 1970 something, right?
Sure. It was already bad in 1996.
I understand that.
Okay.
But so I just think that when you first, if you were somebody who joined the professorate in the 70s and 80s, you even had a sense of autonomy about your job prospects. Mm-hmm. You actually could tell yourself as you were getting the PhD, I will get a job in the part of the country I want to be in, right, in the kind of university I want to be in. There are opportunities. So there, yes, was that false, but sense of autonomy. Like, yeah, I have control over, if, yeah, I do all the things, there will be jobs, right?
Right.
And I think even when you were first in the early 90s, there was still that sense of like, I'm going to apply, I'll have several different things, I may or may not be successful, but there was a belief that you would have a job.
Yeah, I don't know about that, because that's getting into the core of the whole professors in enterprise. And just because there's a belief doesn't mean that belief is grounded in, right, reality. I can't say. The job market was terrible in 1996, right, truly bad. So,
right, I'm not making my point very well. I'm not saying that you had autonomy. You didn't have autonomy in 1972 either. You just had enough jobs that you could delude yourself into thinking you had autonomy. Mm. I think you can, that one of the things that's happened in the last several years, that there's been more conversation about, there's been a widespread conversation about, what the heck? This is an industry where you have no control over whether you get a job, mm-hmm, period.
Mm-hmm. And they lie about it.
Right. So if you're an attorney, mm, and you can't get a job at a firm, and you could go out and hang up a shingle. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've said this so many times. It's probably on like 20 podcasts.
Right.
There's a sense of, I can do this. Now, there are people, like he talks about doctors and that sort of thing, who now they're answering to big corporations and, mm-hmm, they're, you know, squeezed and squeezed. I know for veterinarians, this, yeah, is really true. It's like, sure, there are no mom and pop veterinarian, right, places, right, anymore. It's like mortuaries in, mm-hmm, the same way, right? Mm-hmm. So there's no, like, I'm working squeezed by a corporation. Mm-hmm. I feel like the conversation of the university as a corporation is a very recent conversation.
It is. Yeah, no, that's true.
And that,
sure,
sense of, I am working for a corporation. Mm-hmm. If I can get a job at said corporation.
Okay. I think I understand a little bit more what you're saying. The actual conditions of hiring have been bad since about the 1990s.
Right.
So in a way, there have been PhDs deluded about their autonomy since the 1990s, right, including me when I first went on, right, the job market. So, like, that is something that's been long lasting. But there hasn't been, when I was in my misery of the 90s, and even when I was leading job market workshops in the early days after I had a tenure track job for the grad students, yeah, there was that idea that you would call the university system a corporate body,
right,
a corporate entity devoted to downsizing. That did take a while, right, to develop. And there's still a lot of resistance to it, but much less. And it's become much more normalized.
And there's a massive resistance to accepting that it's just capitalism at work.
Yeah.
All day, every day.
Yeah, there is.
And, you know, you and I were having that conversation with people a decade ago, and they were just like, I do not want to, right, hear what you have to,
well,
say.
Well, that's why they call me, those historians call me a grifter.
Right.
Because it's applying capitalist logic to the academic enterprise.
Right.
So that is actually the topic of my TEDx talk that is going to go live tomorrow, which is Friday, which will be the Friday prior to everybody hearing this.
Okay.
This podcast episode.
So I think that sense of autonomy, mm-hmm, and I also think that with this pandemic, trapped at home, mm-hmm, with all the responsibilities of the domestic, with a university is actually not interested in that, that's, you get a clear picture of how autonomous you are not.
Right. And then I also want to say that we went directly to the job market, which you know, of course, that's like the litmus test. But there are more and more grad students who are just trying to make ends meet,
right,
not getting paid enough in terms of their tuition, going on strike, uh-huh, which they're doing constantly, and then having the institutions hiring these, you know, these union-busting law firms, you know, for $2 million or for whatever to fight the unionization efforts of the students when they, for the same $2 million, they could have just increased their stipends. Anyway, but there is this lack. I mean, that's what is motivating the unionization efforts on the part of grad students is this lack of autonomy and that.
Well, I'm going to go the other direction. I'm very fascinated right now. Fascinated is a weird word, but I'm up close and personal right now with a lot of junior, with a lot of assistant, associate, and full professors who are in major burnout. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking more about once you're in, mm-hmm, and how you thought once you got in you would have autonomy,
mm-hmm,
and how quickly you're disabused of that, mm-hmm, right? Also, the second thing they talk about is a sense of mastery,
mm-hmm,
and what they mean by mastery is being able to notice progress, mm-hmm, to notice that you are getting better, mm-hmm, or that you are improving.
Mm-hmm.
So if I would guarantee you, if I took the 40 people I talked to today in the various groups and individual settings, mm-hmm, so I probably saw this morning a total of 40 people.
Mm-hmm.
I bet if I asked every single one of them, do you feel you have increased mastery in your work since the pandemic started, they would say, no,
mm-hmm,
I'm just more and more incompetent at what, mm-hmm, I do. And that's partly because people focus on what they get wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But also, and this goes back, I think, to the material, you know, realities of labor, is that when you are overworked, you're not doing as good a job, so you never get the sense that you're doing it well. So, mm-hmm, you don't have a sense of mastery,
right,
which leads to burnout. Why does somebody want to keep doing something that they feel shitty about their job,
yeah,
how well they've done it?
Yeah.
I don't.
Yeah, for sure. That's true. I mean, I think the mastery part is the least of the three, autonomy, mastery, and belonging. I see the loss of autonomy and the loss of belonging in some ways as the most easy to see. Mastery,
oh, yeah,
being,
and I see the middle one is.
Oh, do you?
Oh my gosh!
Because I see mastery as being. So because when I work with people, I know how happy they are when they get an article out. Despite all of this, in the face of all of this, they still get an article out, or they still did it. Or you should see how many people are on the professor's in page or the professor is out Facebook page, saying, you know, to tell you the truth, the pandemic was terrible. The teaching, the adjustments were terrible. But I've never had such a good semester teaching as I had this last semester.
Huh.
It's like I mastered it. I figured out how to do the online teaching, and the students showed up and responded, and we just had an amazing experience. I'm hearing more of that in the last couple of weeks.
But see, that proves my point.
Mm.
You've taken something that you've given somebody a chance. I understand it was baptism by fire.
Mm.
But you've given somebody a chance to take something, develop it, test it, and be proven immediately to be a master or not at it, and to keep working at it to get better.
Mm-hmm.
That's my point, that the vast majority of your academic life
is not in the middle of doing that,
yeah, where somebody says, here's a thing,
right,
do it, master it, deliver it.
I guess all I'm trying to say is that I think I'm not being articulate, but as people complain about their loss of autonomy and their loss of belonging and their workload increasing and their burnout, that they still point to those, I don't know. I still see people pointing to those occasional little highlights of mastery pop up now.
Yeah, because that's the thing that keeps
you.
Because that's
why they're still there doing it, because there's got to be something that's keeping you.
Well, and that's the thing that it's like, oh my God, I finally did something. I mean, just because you're excited and because you know, caught a unicorn doesn't mean you're not riding a donkey the rest of the time, right?
So that's an interesting metaphor. Yeah.
So I think that's really important to just notice, because I have clients do this, and I'm going to encourage you all to do this. And this is going to seem so hokey, but you just try it. Pick somebody in your life, and you can't think of somebody in your life. Pick your face in the mirror and look in the mirror, or text or tell somebody, I'm an expert in my field and I know what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
And notice how much you resist that. Then tell me people have a sense of mastery. That's all I'm saying. And we can just move on to the next one. I'm just going to leave it there. Because we do have to get onto this book,
all right.
We can argue this point.
I think mastery and imposter syndrome or confidence are slightly different things, but it's okay. It doesn't matter. I mean, that is a topic.
Of course it matters.
Well, it does matter, but it's a topic for another time.
Because the last thing of belonging, I think where I see burnout in the people that I work with is they came in with this idea that they were part of a larger project, this thing that was beyond capitalism, that was a mission. Either in the higher good or in the intellectual project. And
yeah, which is, I mean, the thing that I noted, I haven't
so
had.
So you haven't mentioned the book yet.
I haven't
so now
mentioned
we're transition
the book.
To
okay,
the book.
From the article to the book, Sarah Jaffe, J-A-F-F-E, Work Won't Love You Back. Mm-hmm. And it's brand new, 2021. It has COVID updates in it. So, and the subtitle is How Devotion to Our Jobs Keeps Us Exploited, Exhausted, and Alone.
Right.
Could not be more a perfect mirror image of the autonomy, mastery, belonging mm-hmm. versus exploited, exhausted, and alone.
Right.
You know? So right. I haven't had a chance to read it. It just arrived. I even ordered it in hardback, if you can believe it, because it's not out in paperback yet. So that's how much I wanted to read it. Now, I do want to also mention that Mia Tokumitsu did a whole takedown of the Do What You Love economy back in 2015. Mm-hmm. She also had a book called Do What You Love that explores the same thing. I haven't had a chance to see how Sarah Jaffe's work intersects with that or if she cites her or whatever. But the upshot is that it's about this kind of these particular sectors of the labor force, like sports or nonprofits, the religion fields, and then of course academia are places where you're supposed to love what you do. It's supposed to not be monetized. And she has a line here. So her chapter on academia, I think, is chapter 8. It's called The Proletarian Professionals. I love that title. And she says, basically, she looks at this one example, this person, Catherine Wilson, and says she was looking for independent scholarly work with knowledge production more or less for its own sake, seen as a social good. And that's what the mythos is of the academy, that a lot of people are defending with their dying breath, but fewer and fewer people are attached to because the economy just doesn't allow it.
Right.
The conditions of work, the burnout is so terrible. The exploitation is so terrible. I guess the question that if we had to distill this down to one question, it would be, is it burnout or is it exploitation? And those are the two burnout. So you have, you know, Harvard Business Review type guys, which is Stahlberg's one of those type of guys, right. Performance coaches who are going to be like, oh, it's burnout. Let's talk about that. And then you're going to have the nerdy intellectuals who are like, it's not fucking burnout. It's fucking exploitation. And this is not a sustainable economy. And of course, we all know which side I fall in that. But we get great insight from the Harvard Business Review guys.
Right. Well, and I don't know that they're mutually exclusive or not the same thing, mm-hmm. right? So we can, if he's going to say in that sort of, you know, performance language of autonomy, right? Mm-hmm. He's going to talk about having autonomy in your work, a sense of your own, being able to do what you want and how you want to do it. And you come into upper level professions thinking that, and then that doesn't happen. To my mind, one of the major reasons that doesn't happen is exploitation. Your mm-hmm. autonomy is taken away.
Yes.
And you are consumed by whatever version of capitalism we're in at that exact moment. So I just think, I don't think they're one or the other. Mm-hmm. I think that they're not interested in deconstructing capitalism.
Right.
Right.
They like capitalism. They think it's fundamentally fine. They want people to make more money.
Right.
And be more successful and move up and basically.
And enjoy themselves more.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't read a lot of the stuff like how can we.
Oh, no,
the
I know.
Stuff like how can we get more out of the worker? The stuff I read is like, how can you be a less unhappy worker?
Mm-hmm.
And until we can figure out how to separate ourselves from capitalism, I think that it's not.
Oh, I agree with you.
Yeah.
I mean, I that's why we, occupy this space where it's like acknowledge exploitation and then figure out if you might decide you're going to stay in it. And so then how can you make exploitation work for you?
Well, how can you not, how can you not be part, like assist them in exploiting?
Yeah. How can you not assist them in exploiting you? That's, right. That's true.
So maybe your autonomy comes from resisting
right,
exploitation.
There you go.
I don't know. But anyway, do you, what is,
well,
is there more
I
that you want
to say?
About?
I did want to say one more thing. She cites a Stanley Aronowitz, which is an article I hadn't read yet, where he called, this was about 20 years ago, he called the academia the, quote, last good job in America, unquote, because it did provide autonomy,
yes.
mastery, and belonging.
Yes.
And it did. And the, what's crazy about where we're at right now, she writes about how it, that has crumbled in the years
right.
since, and
right.
her chapter is about that, and I'll read it, and then we can talk about it on another episode. But the upshot is that the mythos of that academy lives on.
Mm-hmm.
It just lives on, lives on, lives on, and it fuels cohort year after year after year of applicants to PhD programs who truly believe this is what they're entering.
Yes.
And you can see it on Twitter when they say they got accepted, and they say, this girl's going to be a professor. I'm like, oh, my God. Anyway, the point being, there is the mythos lives on. It's, I mean, it's living on fumes,
right?
At and, this point,
but it's also, I mean, there's there's it's a closed feedback loop once you get inside of it because there's the expectation that you're supposed to enjoy it, that it's a greater good, and it. So I just really want to drop this in here because we're going to run out of time.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, we talked about this. We start with this article, right? This
mm-hmm.
business article. And then we move on to this whole thing of your job's not going to let you back. And today I
love
read,
you back.
Love you back. Sorry. Probably not even going to like you back.
and
then today in this journey, right? This winding journey, I became aware of, that's what I'm looking for, a scholar at the University of Michigan, a sociologist named Aaron, it's either Sech or Ketch, it's C-E-C-H.
Okay.
Who does work on passion.
Oh.
And her upcoming book is called The Passion Principle. And on her Twitter page, she says, I'm a sociologist who studies cultural mechanisms of inequality reproduction, including gender, race, and LGBTQ bias in STEM and other professions. But if you read a little bit more, she's talking about how cultural narratives reinforce that.
Mm.
How so the whole passion narrative reinforces those inequalities. So I'm saying this because I invited her to be on the podcast, and I hope she listens to this
comes. I hope she comes.
But I think that we can follow that thread all the way through, right? So we start off with capitalism. Let's figure out how you can work more and be a better worker. Now we're going to move over here to, hey, wait a minute. These are systems of oppression and everything else to, oh, we're going to go one step further than that. The way you talk about
mm-hmm.
them and the whole narratives.
Mm-hmm.
create the inequality that you guys are mm-hmm. talking about and that you guys are trying to like navigate.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think if you feel burned out, let's just wrap up with this, my version, and then you get to do yours, right? If you feel burned out, look at those three things.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have those three things, of course you don't. It's capitalism. So then what?
Mm-hmm.
What? That's the question I would start to explore is where can I increase my sense of autonomy, my sense of mastery?
Mm-hmm.
How do I increase my belonging?
Mm-hmm.
Where do I make community
so I can
navigate this storm?
I love these as coaching principles for people who are considering leaving the academy.
Yes.
Because it will help you clarify what your grievances are with what you're currently doing and what you hope to gain by leaving.
Right.
I really think that can help. And when I think about how I do coach people to leave, how much I'm really talking about, certainly autonomy and belonging most
right.
of the time.
Right.
Masteries, I'm finding myself hung up on this because I think people, yeah, no, absolutely. That's actually right. That much of what I talk about is you have mastered 150 skills. You just don't give yourself credit for any of them.
Right.
Because
you don't have a sense of mastery.
Because you don't have a sense of it.
Right.
Yeah. So that's, yeah, no, this is good.
All right. So feeling burned out, check out those three areas. Ask yourself why, how, what. I don't know what else.
See you next time.
Bye. One last note here. This podcast is made possible every week by the exceptional work of our editor and producer, Stephanie Blair. If you happen to need audio visual work, be sure you go check out baddieblair.com, BaddieBlair.com. And also, I encourage you to check out her phenomenal home decor and apparel designs. And you can check those out at chochochen.com, chochochen.com. As always, Stephanie Blair, we are grateful for your incredible talent. Thank you.